but you cannot stick your head in the sand with any of this, because it will change how we manage money over time. We're already talking about the Reserve Bank of Australia saying we're going to have an EAUD, which I am thrilled about, because it's going to reduce the costs to everybody. So I think that's great. I can't wait. But it's coming for you, so you may as well learn a little bit about it and understand it, so that you're not frightened of it, so that you're not hiding.
Welcome to the Sisterhood Club podcast, where we talk all things business, Web3 and NFTs. We're on a mission to educate, elevate and empower women into the world of Web3. So join us on this journey as we learn together from leading experts. And remember, this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. So please do your own research and enjoy today's episode. Welcome to another episode of the Sisterhood Club podcast with myself, Georgie Hubbard.
And me, Pam Caldwell.
Today, we are very excited and honoured as we are joined by Lacey Filipich. Lacey is the founder of Money School, where her mission is to help people become financially independent and reclaim their lives. She is passionate about helping people become time rich so they're able to live the lives that they want. She is also a speaker, mother, and best-selling author. And we are extremely honored and excited to have her as an educator within the Sisterhood School. Lacey, amazing to have you here today. And we've already had a really good conversation, before this. But before we dive into some real, like, juicy conversation here, I'd love to kick off with just a little bit of an introduction to yourself, your journey, and what sort of brought you here today. So over to you, Lacey. Who are you? What's your journey? I'd love to hear.
Thank you so much for having me, Georgie and Pam. It's delightful to be joining you. I'm so excited to have the chance to chat about all this stuff. It's really piqued my interest, and I love seeing what you're doing. I think what people often get tripped over with me is they go, why are you in personal finance when your background's actually chemical engineering? So not your traditional personal finance author from that perspective. And the reason that I work in personal finance now is I realized that people weren't getting taught about money. And that came through, I had a personal crisis that caused me to think about whether I was going to continue trying to climb the corporate ladder as an engineer and into management, which happens a lot with engineers. They go and manage people, which is pretty funny considering we're not traditionally considered very good with people, but that's okay. And that crisis made me redesign my life and start taking mini retirements. And my friends were saying, how come you don't have to work so much, Lacey? How come you can take 6 months off and have the other 6 months bumming around in Margaret River down south of Perth where I live? And I was like, well, I've been, saving and investing, and, my properties are paying me rent and my shares are paying me dividends. And what have you been doing? And they were all getting credit cards and car loans and things like that. And of course, if it was today, they would have been getting buy now, pay later, but it wasn't around back then. And that was the point at which I realized, hey, people don't get taught about money the way that my mum taught me about money. And I was just very lucky to win the ovarian lottery. And that's why I now run Money School. So I realized, of course, that part of the reason people don't learn about money, first of all, it wasn't in the curriculum when I first started Money School. It is now. But the other thing is, it's made to feel quite overwhelming and scary. There's lots of jargon. It's very easy to get turned off, especially by new things. I think people often put it in the overwhelm bucket and say, oh, I can't look at that. And I think a little bit of education goes a long way with money. So I focus on trying to make it less scary, less intimidating, and help people make decisions that are going to empower them for the future.
Amazing.
That's absolutely amazing, Lacey. So I'm just so keen to dive deep into this conversation, because I sort of came from a more traditional sort of background in terms of how I was educated about money. And I think that growing up for me, the goal is to pay off your mortgage. That was the thing that we were all working towards, right? Paying off that money, that mortgage, having a little bit of savings in the bank so that you can go your one holiday a year. Thumbs up, you're winning at life. So just talk to me about what were some of the key things that you sort of spoke with about your parents when you were growing up, and what really encouraged you to sort of enter that world of splitting your money and saving for the future?
Yeah. It's an important thing. I think a lot of parents ask me today, because they go, how did your mum teach me? Can you please just tell me how she did it? And they copy, which I love. It's great. If it works for them,
that's what I'll
do. That's what Money School exists for, to teach people how to do that. What happened throughout my whole life is I watched my mother, who was a single parent who didn't get a lot of child support from my dad. They split when I was 8. And she earned, when they split up, about $30,000 a year and was supporting two girls. It's not a lot of money. And so I became very conscious that there was decisions to be made. And I watched at the same time my dad, who ran his own business, and he spent a lot of money on things that we would call depreciating assets, I now know, things like cars and clothes and jewelry and that kind of stuff. And so watching them both make decisions was really educational for me. And I consider in that, sorry, Dad, I love my dad. He's an example of what not to do. Right. Whereas my mother was a real role model for me, someone that I wanted to follow, someone who was very sensible about saving and conservative investing. I've never been very, active as an investor in terms of I haven't wanted to spend a lot of time doing it. I've wanted to, you know, take very traditional, conservative, slow build options so that I didn't have to spend a lot of time reading or managing or anything like that. And I kind of got that from my mum, though, interestingly enough, she was much more of a risk taker than I was. and considering I'm younger, that doesn't fit most models. Everyone thinks younger people are supposed to be more into risk and older people aren't. It's completely the opposite for us. But watching them was a real education, and my mum just planted little seeds. Rather than lecturing me, she'd just ask me questions like, what are you going to do with that money that you earned when I was 10 years old and starting my first business? And then when I said, oh, I don't know, maybe spend it. What else could I do? She was like, well, did you know if you put it in the bank will give you more money called interest. And then next year they give you more money on that money as well. And that's called compounding. And my mind went and exploded. And that was the beginning of me deciding to save half of every dollar I've ever earned, which I still do 30 years later. So little conversations. I'm just very lucky that she was smart enough not to tell me what to do because I'm very pig-headed and I would not have listened. But she was sensible about asking those little questions and just teasing out what interested me, what I was willing to do, and then building on that and just showing me the way with those things, you know, giving me books or taking me to courses or just even having conversations. So that's how I learned.
I think that's amazing. And look, I take my hats off to parents now because I think we can all sit here and say that life is very different to how when I grew up, right? There wasn't such thing as social media back then. And I believe that we live in an instant gratification society, right? That paints this picture of if you don't have this type of handbag or that you live in this type of house or drive this certain car, you're not successful, right? And I feel like there's this constant battle between, you know, wanting all these nice things that, you know, society deems as you're doing well and also, you know, pulling away the savings, making these smart investment choices. And I think that there is this, people are torn because, you know, we go into like these big shopping malls that are just set up to be like, you know, buy all these things and you're going to feel amazing. So what are you sort of seeing and how can people be super aware because we're constantly being marketed to every single minute of every single day. How can we as society, like be aware of this and make sure that we are making the right financial decisions that are going to move us ahead and not sort of keep us stuck and even fall into debt?
This is a really big philosophical question, I think, and it is really important for people to think about in their own context. So what I have noticed from talking to people is that the wealthiest people I know are the daggiest, like genuinely. They're wearing the worst clothes. They're the ones that couldn't give a damn how they look. They're not wearing makeup. They're like that. They don't invest a lot of their, I guess, ego or definition of themselves almost in how they look or the things they own. And they have the capacity to have those things and to look that way and to put in that effort. They have the time, the energy, and the resources, but they don't think it's a priority. What I see a lot of is people who perhaps feel like they're not at the place in their life where they want to be. Or they're going through some kind of trauma, or they've been through some kind of trauma. They just don't feel good, I think, and they rely on spending money to fill a hole often. And whether it's I want to look a certain way or I want to have, like you talked about, you know, that, you know, everyone's got to have the latest gadget or, you know, accessory. There's a lot of peer pressure to feel like you need that to be doing well. And that is a definition of success. So I'm easily, like, somehow, I guess being an engineer has helped, by the way. Engineers are notoriously daggy dresses. We love to be super frugal because we hate waste. And I hate waste. I hate wasted time. I hate wasted resources.
Five black t-shirts.
yeah, that sort of thing. And so I think that sort of preaches to it. But I just find that you've got to really think about why you're buying the thing. And it's sometimes really uncomfortable to confront it, and some people aren't ready. So if you are doing that, I would say, look, if you're willing to look at it, start thinking about why you feel compelled to have things you don't need that you just want, because that's, I think, the big thing. We convince ourselves we need it, but hey, is it really a need? It's probably more of a want. And if you're in a space where you can, you know, spend some time getting to those root causes and understanding that, then making that decision of, if I'm going to buy that thing, I'm spending X amount of time to earn the money to buy it. Is it worth that many hours, days, weeks of my time? And I guess I got to a point where, because I value time so highly, it's just very rarely worth it for me to spend money on something that I don't absolutely need. And I derive my satisfaction from having a say in how I spend my time. So I think that's really, if you can get that mind shift to valuing your time more than the things, you've got a better chance of overcoming that instant gratification and that need to keep up with what everybody else is doing. But you also have to have a degree of feeling good about yourself to do it, I think. You've got to feel pretty satisfied and confident and comfortable with where you are in life.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I just want to say this, that, you know, I can definitely relate to that. There was a point in my life when I was, you know, working in a corporate job, and the only thing that gave me fulfillment was going out a weekend and buy myself something new. You know, and it was to fill a hole. You know, luckily I was saving very hard at the time for my first home, and I managed to get that. So it wasn't like I was just blowing all my income on, you know, just those, you know, consumer products. But it was honestly like my highlight of my weekend, because I hated my Monday to Friday, was going to the shopping mall and buy myself, you know, a new handbag or a new jumper or whatever it was, right? Just to make myself feel something, because to be quite honest, I felt pretty dead inside. So I think that's a really powerful message for every single person to think about, like, you know, if you want to go and buy yourself a new thing. And look, it's nice to treat yourself, right? I'm not going to sit here and say that I still don't like going shopping and treating myself, right? Who doesn't, right? I still do enjoy that. But if I think the younger generation, and, you know, a family member, you know, messaged me a little while ago saying they really wanted to buy a Gucci belt. And I was like, that's a beautiful belt, right? But, you know, you're still in university, you've saved up all this money. Instead of buying that Gucci belt, could that not be saved, or could that not be invested? Like, why do you need that belt? What is that belt going to give you? And I really challenged her on it, and she still went and got the belt. but at least she was, you know, I wanted to kind of understand, like, why do you need to go and spend, you know, £500 on a belt? Like, what is that going to do for you?
No, she's
like,
things.
Well, you know, I just want, yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, I
want to feel good. And I'm like, well,
yeah, it's tough, isn't it?
Maybe you need to feel good inside, right? So it is. Yeah. It's really hard.
There's two things at play that really make people do that. One is you get a hit of feel good chemicals when you spend. And that is why money does burn a hole in our pocket. Your brain is not your friend when it comes to cash. Mm-hmm. If it gives you a chance to spend,
I can relate to this so much. I love to shop.
Yeah, I love shopping too. And I think, look, if you're going to have the Gucci belt, have the Gucci belt. But that's it. You don't go then and buy the Gucci shoes and you don't buy the jacket and the shirt, and you don't go out next weekend and buy it again. You give yourself 6 or 12 months before you buy another significant item. But because we get that hit and because it's like a drug, because it's the same kind of feeling that we get from drugs or sex or from, you know, exercise, we're chasing that hit of feel-good chemicals. So our brain does that. So that's the first thing that I think we have to know, that our brain is not on our side. And we can't, expect our brain to be built into this discipline of, I won't spend it. The only reason I overcome it is because I've got something more important to me, which is my time. That overrides that need for the dopamine hit, right? So that's what you need. The second thing is, when people are in financial stress, this research just blew my mind when I read it. It's out of Princeton University, and they were studying the effect of financial stress on people's IQ. And when you are financially stressed, your IQ drops by 13 points on average. Wow. So part of your CPU of your brain, if you like, your cognitive capacity is chewed up. And if you've ever had that experience, you can probably remember, you know, being out to dinner with your mates or on the train or whatever, and you're thinking, can I afford my rent? Can I afford the mortgage? Can I cover the school fees? Whatever it is that's worrying you. And because that's chewing up part of your brain space, it reduces your IQ. So you make worse decisions in every area of your life, not just in money. You'll make worse career decisions. You'll make worse relationship decisions. You will struggle because it affects the whole of your life. And it's specific to financial stress that they've tested, but I can actually imagine it applying to any kind of stress. So 13 IQ points is significant. We're human beings are an average of about 100. I haven't got 13 IQ points to spare. But that means that when you are stressed, you make these choices that aren't good choices. And a uni student would typically probably be under some financial stress. They'd probably be wondering about whether they can get employed. So what happens is we used to get taught poor people make bad decisions and that it's a character flaw. And so poor people stay poor. But actually what happens is when we feel poor, we make bad decisions. And often those decisions keep us poor. So that's this real problem for people. So you see people that are in terrible financial situations spending money in ways that a person who's not in financial stress would go, that's silly. Come on. But they're doing it because they're not going to make as good a decision anyway. So you've got that dopamine, you've got the financial stress, and that's why you see some people make really poor decisions that they would not have made if they didn't feel that way. Interesting thing, huh?
It really is.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. It really is. I would actually love to chat about the mini retirement concept that you've mentioned. Now, this was a mind blown for me because I think it's something that is so powerful that could actually flip the mindset of many people, especially young people, who after being cooped up for 2 years throughout the course of COVID are desperate for experiences and travel. And, it just opens up your mind because I think we are so conditioned to work our entire lives for this end goal, this end retirement, right? So please share the concept behind the mini retirement and what that can mean for young people.
Oh, love talking about this. One of my favourite topics. So the term mini retirement comes from Tim Ferriss's book, The 4-Hour Workweek, and that's where I first picked it up when I had that crisis and was like, oh, my gosh, my life cannot continue this way. What are the alternatives? That's when I came across it. And out of all the things in the book, that's the thing I have applied the most. And the idea is when we first designed retirement, it was designed to be a gift for people who had literally lived past the age of the average lifespan so that they didn't have to keep working into their grave. Because people just used to, we're talking, a couple of centuries ago, work till they died. That was normal. Or they were invalided. Mm. That was it. You didn't have a retirement. So they introduced this concept of retirement. And I would call that the end of life retirement. But we use retirement in the traditional sense to mean that you get to the end of your working life and then you stop working and then you play golf or you travel or you have coffee with your friends and you don't work again. And of course, the problem with that is people are living longer. So you might have 20 or 30 years of that now. And also what you probably hear a lot of people talk about is when they get to that age, they don't want to travel. They don't want to take up new hobbies necessarily. Mm. They're tired. Then maybe they've had, injuries and stuff like that, or they've got health complications. And so this idea of mini retirements is don't leave it to the end. Take some of that time in your youth while you're young, while you're fit, while you can do what you want to do and actually experience life while you're not working, because we don't design it well. And look, in Australia, we've got a pretty generous annual leave system. Most people get 4 weeks a year and you get long service leave. And compared to places like America, it's fantastic. But still, you can spend 48 weeks of the year working. Then you spend those 4 weeks recuperating from the 48 weeks that you spent working. And that can go on for 40 or 50 years. So I just went, wow, why would I do that? Why would I spend my whole time working and not enjoying life? And so I started taking mini retirements after that, major health crisis that I had. And, in the first 5 years, had 22 months off in total and split up into chunks of 3 to 6 months each time. And it was fantastic. I didn't have specific goals necessarily for those mini retirements. It wasn't about, hitting some kind of personal goal. We just threw out the alarm clock and had fun. It completely unwound. It takes a while. It took me a good month each time to unwind from the pressure to always be doing something and to be just fine sitting around and not reaching for a phone or anything like that. But it's really healing time when you've been really busy, and it's a fantastic opportunity to come up with new ideas and decide if you're happy with your life. And, I just highly recommend it. If you can find a way to make it happen, having a chunk of 3 to 6 months off at a time when you're young and trying to do that semi-regularly, whether it's every couple of years, whatever you can make work, I think it's worth doing. Why wait? Why wait till you're 65 or 70?
I'm sat here now smiling and nodding along because that's exactly what I've just come off the back of. I called it my soulcation, but AKA a mini retirement, right? I think, you know, Lacey, when we spoke to you, Kai and I had just been off the back of 5 months traveling in a converted Sprinter van. And I realized during that time that I did not have an off button. I had been go, 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 go since I was 14 years of age. I had never taken any time off. You know, I had worked, save. One goal was hit, then another goal was made. I didn't actually know what it meant to unwind, to switch off, to take deep breaths. And for 5 months, we traveled around in our van, and it was one of the most incredible experiences. And in that time, Sisterhood Club came up. And I just thought, isn't this amazing how, because I'm not constantly in doing mode, my creativity is now sort of being awoken. I'm able to think and sit with my thoughts and think about what is next. You know, where do I see myself in 5, 10 years time? What kind of business do I want? Like, all of these questions I had time to process. And I just think that it doesn't have to be 5 months traveling in a van. It could be a few weeks, a month, it could be whatever, but take some time. Like, you know, we're not going to get to the end of our lives and look back and go, oh, that was fantastic. I sent 1,000 emails and, you know, I got that sales done. And, you know, look all that money I got in my bank account. We're going to look back and go, what experiences did I have? What memories have I made? Have I lived? Have I really excelled at life? Am I proud of who I've become? You know, I feel like this is what I want to get across. And this is why I'm so passionate about what we're building with the Sisterhood School, why your course is so important. Because what I got, and I'd love to pick your brain on this, is that people said to me, oh, Georgie, it's easy for you. It's lucky for you. You know, I'm a full-time mom. You know, I've got a job. I've got mortgages to pay. It was always, you know, I don't want to say it, but excuses about why they couldn't do what I was doing. You know, why they couldn't just go off on a trip, you know, for 5 months because I had all of these things. So if there's someone listening to this right now being like, well, this is great. I love the idea of having a mini retirement, but I wouldn't even know how to even start that plan. What advice would you give to that person listening to this right now?
It's an interesting one. Everyone's personal circumstances are so different. So sometimes those reasons are reasons. They're unavoidable. Sometimes you're in a situation in life where you're not going to be able to do it in the short term. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't think about it, plan it, and if opportunities come up, leap on them. And I think that's the difference between saying, no, it'll never happen for me and I can't do it versus, look, it's not right now, but in the future it might be, and then working out what those circumstances might be. You know, often it's, oh, well, I got made redundant. There's a gift. We're moving country because someone's had a work relocation and I'm taking a break. Or it's the kids are now in childcare or at school and I can decide whether I'm ready to go back or not. There's opportunistic timing sometimes. So just because you can't do it right now doesn't mean you should write it off as a possibility forever. Though that said, often we're only looking a few months ahead, aren't we? So that's okay. Just keep in mind that it could happen in the future. The things that made it really easy for me, and it sounds like probably for you too, Georgie, is the fact that I had saved very, very well my whole life. So I had a nice buffer of cash. So not having an income wasn't going to mean that I would starve. So I think for a lot of people, that's the first step, making sure you've got some cash so that you can still live. But the other part of that is when you are mini retired, you can go and live somewhere that's a lot cheaper and life costs come down. I don't know if you saw this with your traveling, but I certainly had with all of my mini retirements, because I track just total spend. I don't track what the components are, but I track what I spend. And on each of my mini retirements, my costs went down by a quarter to a third. Because we'd go and live in an area where rent was cheap. We would go and eat at the food markets, you know, like we would cook a lot and you didn't have to do things in peak hour and you weren't paying for convenience. So I think people tend to overestimate how much they need. They tend to think they need what they're currently earning plus a little bit more. Well, actually, you probably don't need as much as you think. And so long as you've got enough savings to cover that period, plus a little bit extra in case it takes you a while to get back into work or find a new contract or whatever it might be, then that's enough. Now, the things that make it possible for me and my husband to take a mini retirement whenever we feel like it now, and my husband's just coming up to 3 years and his current mini retirement, is the fact that we have a passive income from our assets. That's what's made it sustainable and a complete option. But that doesn't mean that you have to be there. And I actually started taking those mini retirements before I became financially independent. And then when I was working in between those mini retirements, I still concentrated on buying more assets so that eventually the income, which is for me mostly dividends and rent, meets our living costs. And look, we are cheap to run. We're pretty like low key. We're both engineers. We're both dags. So, we don't need a lot.
Both of your five t-shirts each.
Yeah.
No, I love it. I'm genuinely so excited to have money skill as part of the sisterhood skill. I think financial literacy is incredibly important. And in actual fact, female financial independence is something that I feel incredibly passionate about. And for me, I'm in my, I'm going to say, geez, mid to late 30s now. Isn't that depressing? But anyway, like I'm only recently, over the past couple of years, really actually starting to be more financially literate. And that's not what I want for people that are going to be a part of our community. I think it is so important to be educated on how you can make your money work for you. So in terms of the course, Lacey, if we could just actually talk to some of the content of the course. You know, what have you got in there? What kind of nuggets of gold have you got in there that you would like to sort of share? And what is your hope? What's your hope for the women that we're going to have going through the sisterhood school that are going to be doing your course? What's your hope that people take away from completion of Money School?
Yeah, it's I guess this is the reason why I do what I do, right? Being able to help people learn these skills and not feel overwhelmed. So, and I often, to start with the story before I get into the content, whenever someone says, "Oh, I've started late," you know, I always point them to my mother's story. She, being a single parent, didn't have a spare cent, just didn't, while she was raising us. She started investing when she was 49, bought $1,000 worth of Suncorp shares. She got to financial independence at 63. Now, I out-earned her 3 years out of university because engineers do, right? She never made heaps of money, but she was really sensible with it and she saved and invested. So my mother, who, like you would say, she had a low income and then probably an average income towards that end period, she made it. And thank goodness she did, because she ended up passing away 7 years later. So imagine if you'd had that extra 2 years of working, you know, and missed out on that time. We never know what's coming for us. But if you're worried that it's too late for you, think about my mum Fran. If you're younger than 49, you're ahead of her. and you don't have to take stupid, crazy risks. You can just be slow and steady and get there. So I think a lot of people write it off and say, oh, well, it won't work for me because I'm so-and-so or some demographic thing. It can work for most people. It's just a matter of how long it takes you to get there. You know, big incomes add speed, certain demographics add speed, but theoretically, if you've got an income, it's worth trying. It's not going to set you backwards anyway, so you may as well give it a shot. So I focus with financial skills on three rules, and they are save, buy assets, avoid bad debt. So in Sisterhood Club, you're going to find one course for each of those. So the one on avoiding bad debt is about buy now, pay later, which a lot of people fool themselves into thinking is not debt because it's not managed under the National Debt Code and you don't have to pre-qualify. But one in five people using buy now, pay later in Australia is going without meals to meet their repayments right now. It's bad news and it's the most easily accessible. So rather than talking about debt in general and credit cards and all that sort of stuff, I've focused on buy now, pay later because people need to understand, if they're going to use it, how to use it to their advantage and when to use it, and understand that it is borrowing from future you. That's plain and simple. The fact that it's not called interest, that it's fees, is irrelevant. It is debt. So that's the first one that's in there. That's about that avoiding bad debt and how to use that well. Then on saving is about paying future you first, paying yourself first. If you don't put some money aside for you, then you won't be able to invest in a sensible way. You'll have to take a lot of risk if you try to do it, and you might end up with debt that's not sustainable. So saving I consider compulsory. The rate is irrelevant. So the course that actually helps with that is a spending plan course or a budgeting course about how to map out your spending. Now, to be very clear, I don't budget anymore because I save half and then the other half I spend with impunity. If I want to buy a Gucci belt, I buy a Gucci belt, right? I don't, so I don't. But because I've saved.
If you did, you could.
Exactly. Because I've saved first, yeah. I don't care, right? Like what you spend your money on is, you know, spend with impunity and without beating yourself up. If you've saved first and saved aggressively, I would say. I save aggressively or at least ambitiously. But a big part of that from a lot of people is understanding how much they can save. So there's a course in there on how to set up your budget. And I have particularly designed that one for young people who maybe haven't lived out of home yet or don't know what their costs are going to be, but it applies to any kind of budgeting. So it shows a process for how to fill out a paper version. I like a paper version for a budget and how to treat it like a plan. So that's on the how to save really is to understand your spending so that you can put some money aside. And then, of course, the really fun bit is on assets. So in the assets, I talk about what is investing? What does that mean? I talk about a few of the common types of investments. So I talk about property and I talk about shares and I talk about cryptocurrency, which I talk about specifically in there because, look, my opinion is at the moment it's still not what I would class as an investment, because I talk about assets as things that put money in your pocket and you can't make money off crypto monthly unless you stake it at the moment. And that's, you need a little bit of knowledge. But like the same way that foreign exchange wouldn't be considered an asset. You know, like there's lots of things that people invest in that aren't assets for the purposes of becoming financially independent. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't look at it and shouldn't be curious about it and maybe even have some. I have some crypto, but don't expect that it's going to perform as investments would traditionally perform, things like shares and property, which are very heavily regulated, very long establishment times and really broad market opportunities. So you talk about those. Yeah. In there and that, the idea of that is so that people get a bit familiar with the lingo, they understand how they work and then can maybe start dabbling in the ones they're interested in.
Yeah, 100%. And I would agree on everything you've just said then as well. And in terms of those assets, like property is something that I'm very bullish on. I think that, you know, property is something, providing obviously that you invest well in property in good areas where there's lots of infrastructure. And obviously I would always recommend, you know, working with people who, you know, can give you good advice, because again, it's like anything, any investment, of course, there's a risk involved, right? Whether it's crypto, property, stocks and shares. Like I've got money in stocks and shares right now. I'm not even looking at that, because if I looked at that right now, we're going to be in a bear market, I'd probably cry. So that's not being looked at right now. But I don't panic, because what I don't do is invest what I can't afford, right? So I feel like, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, Lacey, as well, because you're the expert and I'm, you know, I educate myself, but you know more than me. But what I do, my wisdom when it comes to stocks and shares is I dollar cost average. So I just put the same amount in every single month, whether it's up, whether it's down. I just go, that's my money going into stocks and shares. That's a long-term investment. I don't play short-term when it comes to stocks and shares. Same as property. I've got a couple of investment properties now. And, you know, I don't even sort of like look at them sort of month to month. They just, you know, basically just pay my mortgage. And I'm very, very grateful to be in the position that I'm in. But I have done exactly what you have done. And that's why I really wanted your course, because I'm so passionate. And I know that you've literally just laid it out exactly what you've done and how you can get to financial freedom from a young age. But touching on the whole like crypto, because this is something as well that I would love to sort of get your thoughts on as well. And I would agree with you. I think that, you know, it is volatile right now. And I think what I really want to get across to the women that listen to this podcast is it's almost not seeing like NFTs and crypto as investments, right? Do I think that women need to be in this space? Absolutely. But more so because what will happen is, you know, Web3 is coming, right? It's going to be, it's the internet. It's Web2 was, you know, it was Facebook, it was Google, it was Read Write. But Web3 is all about, you know, sort of taking back your ownership, taking back your identity almost, right? That was kind of lost in Web2 because we gave all our power away to those big companies. So for me, what my mission is to get more women, yes, interested and curious about crypto. I think you should have a curiosity. You should do your own research, which we can touch upon, but, you know, read, you know, listen to things like this podcast, you know, educate yourself on what is going on in this market. You know, how can you get involved? But always make sure that you don't just pour all of your savings, all of your hard-earned cash into anything. Diversify. You know, I'm never going to sit here and say, yep, you should just put all of your money into NFTs, all your money into properties. Like, that is wrong advice. Anyone tries to do that, run a mile. But what I would love women to do, what I encourage women to do is when you are looking to, you know, looking into crypto and NFTs, look into the founders, look into the utility. Like, are you passionate about what they represent? You know, like, that's what I want to encourage, you know, because it's not going to be, oh, I'm going to invest my $500 and then I'm going to be a millionaire overnight. You know, there's been a few projects that are kind of like where that has happened. People have made a lot of money, right? But I don't want women to think that, you know, that's what NFTs and crypto is all about. I think it's really important for people to have a diverse, you know, a diverse portfolio. And if you can have multiple streams of income, that's, in my view, that's the best way to be. But I'd love to sort of get your thoughts on, you know, why is it that women maybe are a bit more risk averse? So I know that I was, certainly from a younger age. And what do you see, and how are you sort of encouraging the younger generation coming through to be curious and to look in multiple ways of setting themselves up financially?
It's a really interesting point, isn't it? We hear so often rules of thumb, gut feels, sayings that women aren't good with money or any of that kind of stuff, which I completely rail against. I don't think whether you have ovaries or testicles matters or either or both. you know, it's not a thing. It's just made to look like that. And we take a lot of our cues from what we've seen in our family. So if you've had a mother who's like, oh, no, see daddy about the money, or I don't worry about any of that, it's normal if you've picked that up. But there's absolutely zero evidence that women are bad investors or can't save or any of that. And if anyone tells you that stuff, just ignore them. And if you're carrying that, you got to really look at why. Why have you got that belief? So I think I always talk about money being agnostic. Money doesn't give a shit what, excuse me for swearing, but does not care what you've got, you know, that it doesn't care. But that's about, you know, the technical skills. The difference with the genders is our access. It's society structure. So on average, a woman's going to earn less money. They're going to retire with less superannuation. So that is definitely true. That's not up for question. And anyone who tries to tell you there's no gender pay gap or there's no superannuation retirement gap in the genders doesn't understand research, bluntly. They haven't read actual research. They haven't looked at the people who are professionals in this area who spend a lot of time analysing that. So, again, if anyone tells you that, it's BS. So the issue is we've got this average women struggle a lot more because we have less access. And that is, there's a lot of factors there. Mm. We're still the only ones that can grow babies. So you have to take some time off when you have a baby. It's brutal. you have to recover, things like that. But there's all that traditional stuff that happens as well, and stuff that's unconscious and very, very subtle. But it all leads to this thing. I think the challenge is, as a woman, you got to think about whether you're happy to have your own personal pay gap. So my whole career, there might be on average people get paid less if they're women doing what I do, but I have made it my business to make sure that does not happen to me and ask for a pay raise every 6 months when I was working, increase my rates as a consultant, all that kind of stuff. I'm not willing to tolerate my own personal pay gap. I do that because I can, and there are people who can't, and that's why we still need a lot of systemic societal change to help people, because it's not going to fix itself. We've tried that. We need a lot more work to try and make it possible, particularly for men to do more caring roles, to raise the rate of pay for caring roles in general, like childcare and nursing and things like that, and close those gaps. So that's sort of a big picture thing. But anyone who thinks, oh, I'm a woman, I'm going to earn less, on average it might be true, but I think you've got to do everything you can in your power to make that not true for you personally. The more of us that do that, of course, the better it's going to be. but that doesn't come away from we've got to fix society. So that's the first thing I guess I'd say. When it's something about, you know, like for, particularly for cryptocurrency, the point you make about diversification is really important, and not risking money that you're going to need for rent or for food or for anything really important. I think what happens for a lot of people, and this is normal, it's why we gamble, is we hear the stories of the person who turned 10 grand into $1 million, took their money out, and now they're rich. And we think, I want a piece of that. It's not going to happen for most of us. And so although those stories are inspiring, don't take them as normal. that those people were usually very lucky, usually. Sometimes they had access to more information or more knowledge than you had, so they were able to make an educated decision. But a lot of the time it was luck. So you're just going to be conscious of that, that that get-rich-quick stuff is very rare. It's probably not going to happen to you. So make your decisions as if it's going to be a slow burn. I think with something like cryptocurrency, when I'm trying to learn about cryptocurrency, I turn to researchers. So one of my favorite people to follow on this is Professor David Yermak, and he's at NYU Stern, and he's been lecturing on cryptocurrency for 6 or 7 years. And the reason I found him is he came out to Perth to do one of the units at University of Western Australia's MBA, and he did a free public lecture on crypto in 2017, and that's where I went along and learned the background of it, and my eyes just went, oh, this is revolutionary. It has the potential to be massive. I, you know, learned about blockchain actually having been developed in 1992, and that was where I finally understood everyone, you know, conflates blockchains with crypto. But no, crypto is just, it's a currency that uses the blockchain. So whenever I'm talking to people about how cryptocurrency works, I will often say, look, the reason why I don't consider it an investment is because it's outside jurisdictions for prosecution. So if someone does the wrong thing with a company and I've got shares, then I've got some recourse thanks to the laws in Australia. At the moment, they mostly sit outside that. So that's not okay with me for risk. That wouldn't meet my personal thing. But some people don't care. If you don't care, go for it. That's just because I think I'm old enough that I've seen things go wrong badly with that kind of stuff. But you do need to take responsibility for how you manage it. So, for example, hacking of crypto wallets is a big deal. So if you're going to look at crypto, you need to understand what cold storage is and strongly consider that, particularly if you're going to have a lot of money sitting in there. So things like that, I think, are enough to put people off, but that information is out there and you can go to trusted sources like these professors and, like, you know, mainstream media to see some of the stories and then find some people you trust to learn from. But you cannot stick your head in the sand with any of this, because it will change how we manage money over time. We're already talking about the Reserve Bank of Australia saying we're going to have an EAUD, which I am thrilled about because it's going to reduce the costs to everybody. So I think that's great. I can't wait. But it's coming for you, so you may as well learn a little bit about it and understand it so that you're not frightened of it, so that you're not hiding. And then if there are opportunities for you, or you really do get excited in it, you might create a project. I'm talking about crypto or any of the other applications of blockchain, I'm always looking for a use case. So I love the way that you guys are applying. Well, you get the NFT and that gives you access to the club. It's a very clear use case. Makes total sense to me. You know, if you can see an application, that's what I think makes a big difference for whether it's viable for spending your time and energy on.
100%. And that's what excited me, because when I first looked into NFTs, and as did Pam, we were like, what is this? Like, why am I paying all this money for digital art? When I buy art, I want to put it on my wall. I want to look at it. I want to appreciate it. What's going on here? But what excited me was the technology behind it and what you can actually do with it. And also not just that, the communities that you can build. Like, you know, we started this podcast, the amount of amazing conversations that we're having with incredible women is just so phenomenal. And it's just such a collaborative space. So that's really what I'm excited about. It's like, okay, you know, and all of these important topics that we're talking about, I want to bring it to the world, right? And I want to share it with our community, and I want our community to have access to courses like yours. You know, I want women to be educated. And I think that this is a beautiful way where, you know, women, we can come together, we can collaborate, not compete, but collaborate, get together and make the world a better place. Because, you know, I do believe that what the world does need right now is a little bit more of that feminine energy, you know, that little bit more, you know, kindness and compassion and empathy going on in the world. You know, I think that that's really super important, especially where Mother Earth is at right now. Like, she's got a few problems, and I feel like humanity needs to come together. So, you know, that's why I'm so passionate and bullish about Web3. It's, you know, crypto is something different, of course. Like, it's still, you know, important part of it, but it's not, it's such a small part of it. I feel like, you know, what I really want to encourage is that diversity in this space. And I love what you were saying as well about the whole, you know, salary bias and encouraging women to speak up, because, you know, Pam and I have got a recruitment business as well. And we've had that for the last, you know, 4 years. And we've seen firsthand that, you know, the same job, you know, male male candidates will get paid averagely about 20 to 30 grand more for the same job as a woman. And yeah, we've witnessed that firsthand for the last 4 years, right? And we're like, we sat down, we're like, right, we've got to do something about this now, because women simply don't speak up, and they won't even apply for jobs if they don't feel like they hit all of the criteria, whereas men will be like, yep, I'm applying for that. So we've got a lot of work to do. But I think the first thing we need to do is, you know, share these messages, you know, communicate, encourage one another to speak up, tell our stories, and hopefully inspire one another to be the best version of us, and celebrate and elevate and empower, not put other women down, or you not think because she's successful, I can't be. You know, there's enough abundance in the world for everyone, and let's share that around, and let's help one another, and, you know, hopefully in the process of that, raise humanity and make this into a better world. That's my mission anyway. So
yeah, lovely.
Get fired up about it.
on that note, I'm actually also going to go away and consider if I actually need or want a wood burner in my living room.
Oh, I don't know. It's pretty cold in Melbourne, so I think that's a necessity.
You've got me thinking, Lacey, about my purchases.
That's an important thing to do. But that's, I agree with you, Georgie. That's why I'm so big on financial independence. For me, the thought of, and you've had this experience, right? You've had that 5 months off because you could. And during that time, you've come up with this idea. How many other people have got amazing ideas, incredible solutions, or would get to them if they had the mental space? And I really feel like the more people we can have financially independent, so they aren't beholden to a wage. So, you know, their average of 40 hours, 50 hours a week, whatever they spend working, can be put to something else, something creative. Mm. We're going to solve so many of these big problems that are currently not getting solved because there's a lot of people that are chasing money because they have to. So it's a big deal. We can change that.
You could go off. You can go off in so many different directions with it as well, because like just the way that you've put that so beautifully there, Lacey, you're just thinking the mental health implications of the way that we operate as a society at the moment as well. It covers so many areas. So it just all comes back to like the money skill. You've created something that's absolutely phenomenal, and I'm genuinely so excited to have all the women that are going to be part of our platform, giving them access to that, because I think it could change the lives of 100%. many on a global scale.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, Lacey, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. And I'd love to know, like, what is next for you? What are you working on right now? And where can everyone find you apart from obviously in assisted school? But yeah, what's next for Lacey right now?
Well, it's been 12 years that I've been running Money School, my business for. If you want to find that, moneyschool.org.au is always the best place, so you can access the TEDx talk and the books and all that fun stuff. Mm. But I'm actually working on a not-for-profit idea. I would like to see some general financial advice available for free online. So I'm about to go down that fun rabbit hole of finding out about applying for an Australian financial services license. But what it will look like is decision trees. So when you're going to make a decision, when you're ready to Google, at that point of need, it will ask you questions to help guide you to what might be right for you based on your circumstances, and then give you minimum effective dose education at the end at the right point. Rather than being like, hey, take my course on shares, it'll help you work out where you should be. And then that way people have got a better chance of engaging with the education to the best effect at the time when they need it, rather than this sheep dip kind of thing. What I'm noticing, people who do need it, like we'll have some fantastic people who will enroll in this and they'll complete every course and they'll be super excited, and I can't wait to see those people. There's a lot of people who, because they're too overwhelmed, they can't face doing a course. I'm hoping this will help fill that need for them.
Amazing. I have no doubt that it's going to be a huge success and it's going to help so many people. And look, obviously, yeah, I'm super excited to be working with you. And, you know, I can't wait to do your course myself because I'm a student for life. I love learning. I love growing. And I'm definitely going to sit down. I'm sure I'm going to learn lots, and Pam's away to do the budget spreadsheet to see if she can afford her fireplace. And thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure. And I can't wait to continue working with you, like I said. And when we come to Perth, we'll definitely meet up for a little wine, and or maybe we'll get a bottle and go and sit on the beach.
That sounds very sensible, you know, spending wise.
Do you like it? Clever thoughts. But it's been an absolute pleasure, so thank you so much for your time. And yeah, you've been amazing.
Well, thanks for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I really hope that you enjoyed it. And if you did, please give a little share on your social. And if you have time, please leave a review. And I hope to see you next time. Take care.